Hello, and welcome to Chatter, a podcast from The Gist. Today on the show, we're talking to Niall Bakewell from Friends of the Earth. We delve pretty deeply into transparency in politics, political donations, and the DUP dark money scandal. If you enjoy the show, you can share us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and even tell your friends about the show. It's nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Josh.
So, your background, how did you end up working at Friends of the Earth?
I kind of stumbled into this. I spent my years after university working in street fundraising.
Okay.
So back at a time when it was quite easy to approach people in the street and get them to sign up a direct debit. I think that's it's not so easy these days, but back in the late 90s, it was relatively new and novel, and people saw it as a convenient way to do that thing they'd been meaning to do. And a lot of my time was spent fundraising for Greenpeace, Friends of the Earth, environmental NGOs. I think towards the end of my time at university, I was already seeing that I was naturally inclined towards environmental politics and environmentalism as a sort of principle for how we should be living our lives, running our society, running our economy. And so, street fundraising brought me into contact with this team, Friends of the Earth, here in Northern Ireland, back at the start of the noughties, and I just kind of took off from there. I got involved with the local group, began working with them, and so a mixture of my volunteering and also my experience of managing local groups, especially managing street fundraising teams, especially street fundraising teams that were moving around England. Those two sort of experiences together were considered to be the right experience to be employed here. So I've been here 10 years, and it's been a fascinating 10 years.
Now, for people who don't know maybe the more specific details of the dark money scandal, do you want to give a little bit of an overview of exactly what's going on there and what has gone on?
I'm going to take it back a bit from the moment itself to sort of explain a few things. Go back to the late 90s. Huge scandals. Cash for Question scandals. British politics was polluted with dark money.
It still is.
Yes.
Cameron and his, cash for honours.
But what you had back then was that it was very murky. And one of Tony Blair's big successes in his first term was to pass the Political Parties, Elections and Referendums Act. And one of the big flagship parts of that act was that from the 1st of January 2001, anybody giving more than £7,500 in any 12-month period to a political party would be named by the newly formed Electoral Commission, and that anybody could find that information out immediately. So that's not a Freedom of Information request, it's just that information is publicly available, it's now on their website. Very easy to find and download. Who's funding your parties? The clauses that covered this new principle of transparency, that a political party must register these donors and that this information must be publicly available, that was immediately what they called disapplied. Legislative language is interesting. Disapplied to Northern Ireland because the institutions were so young. Now, no other aspect of political transparency was disapplied to Northern Ireland. So you still
could make the security argument for it.
But then you could also make that security argument for everybody else involved in party politics in Northern Ireland, and no one else was being given this protection apart from the big donors. So you still had to name all of your candidate sponsors. Okay. Like, so the 10, 12 people who had to sign your nomination forms for you to stand for public office, they all had to be named, and they were all residents of that constituency, so very, very easily found. Party constituency offices sitting on high streets with the people working for them very visible, and you know their names and numbers on websites, and yet this very rare group of people who could afford to give more than a quarter of the average annual wage to a political party needed protection. Don't understand why, but you know what? That's history. 2006, a Northern Ireland Act was passed that included the inclusion of Northern Ireland finally into the regime of registering your donors with the Electoral Commission, but with a time-limited clause saying, but for now, that information is not to be put in the public realm, and any employee of the Electoral Commission to name any of the information on this list will go to jail. Now, that was...
But the Electoral Commission still had to be aware of who these donors
the
were
electoral,
at that stage?
Yes. Okay. The Electoral Commission is the only... The Electoral Commission of Northern Ireland is the only institution that can see the list of donors who have been giving money to political parties at that level since 2007.
Okay.
The idea was that this clause, this secrecy clause, would lapse after 2 years with an option for the Northern Ireland Secretary of State to renew it, and that would be only on a rolling 2 year basis, and they could do that with very simple statutory instrument until the point where it was agreed that it would be safe.
Okay.
So the principle of party funding transparency was in Northern Ireland, but we were in this shadowy place called the prescribed period,
okay,
where one day we would be able, that would lapse and we'd be able to see it. And then secretaries of state continually kept renewing that secrecy clause as it came up. So this was the situation we were in 2013.
Okay.
There was then another Northern Ireland Act, which did two things at once. One, it made that secrecy regime permanent until otherwise decided by the Secretary of State. So this need to constantly renew secrecy every 2 years was now, no, the default state was permanent secrecy, but the Secretary of State had the power at any point to increase transparency as much as they wanted, irreversibly. So if they say, right, okay, as of today, you can know the amounts of each donation, but not the identities of people who gave it.
Okay.
But you couldn't then reverse that later. So it's, and that was again on statutory instrument. You don't need Parliament to vote on it. The Secretary of State can just go, okay, sign a statutory instrument, enact that, make that happen.
Okay.
And it was agreed that every donation before the 1st of January 2014 was to remain permanently secret. No one ever had the power to identify who those donors were. Now, I totally disagree with that, but that's where we are.
Yeah. It's unfortunately the law of the land.
It's the law of the land, nothing you can do about that. But 1st of January 2014 onwards, the principle was eventually the people of the United Kingdom will be able to find out who these other donors were.
Okay.
Fast forward to 2016. And suddenly, this huge Leave campaign is being paid for, like all these posters and all of these placards and this huge wraparound advert in the Metro.
Mm.
So British, mainland Britain, if you want to call it mainland, or the you know, England, Scotland and Wales, you suddenly see a huge amount of Leave campaign activity right towards the end of the referendum campaign. And all of it has audit funded by the DUP. And Adam Ramsay and Peter Gagan in the Open Democracy campaign, they begin to investigate how could a small party, by UK terms, suddenly be spending obviously quite a lot of money, more than they've ever spent on an election in Northern Ireland, on campaigning everywhere except Northern Ireland. And they dig and they dig and they dig, and eventually they work out that this campaign would have cost hundreds of thousands of pounds. And really the sort of their expose of this coincided with the 2017 Emergency Assembly election. So the other political parties then begin to really put sort of pressure on the DUP to name, like, who gave you a load of money and how much was it?
And, well, I think the figure that is batted around is about £440,000.
Yeah, that's now been confirmed.
Okay.
But certainly at first the DUP was being very coy, and Arlene Foster was saying in interviews that she had nothing to do with that, knew nothing about how much it was.
Well, it seems that Geoffrey Donaldson is the one that sort of dealt with it more than...
All this now has been confirmed, and they eventually named an organisation called the Constitutional Research Council.
Mm.
And they confirmed the amount was $435,000. Now, the big question now is, what information did they really give the Electoral Commission of Northern Ireland?
Mm.
Have they simply said they got that amount of money from this thing called the Constitutional Research Council? The Constitutional Research Council is not a legal entity. It is not in and of itself a legally permissible donor.
Okay.
And so
what is its status?
As a nameable donor, from the point of view of the PAPERA rules,
mm-hmm.
The rules about taking donations above £7,500 must be a permissible source. Therefore, you have to do this thing called due diligence.
Okay.
As a recipient of that money, you have to know the actual identities of the organizations or individuals giving that money. And the Constitutional Research Council is not the primary source of that money.
They have some shady ties.
Now, I'm not going to comment on that, but all I know is
it's all very in the dark at the minute.
That if it is the case that the only information the Electoral Commission of Northern Ireland received about the source of that donation was Constitutional Research Council, then there are big questions about the legality of that donation. Because if the DUP didn't actually confirm the original primary sources of that money, that they were UK citizens, that they were all those things you need to do for due diligence, then there are big questions. And that's what Adam and Peter are asserting.
Mm.
Now, the best way to confirm that would be for the public, for the third sector and fourth estate especially, to be able to see the extant donor list from the 1st of January 2014 to the present day. That is the best way to resolve this toxic speculation about the lawfulness of this donation. I'm not saying whether it's lawful or not. I don't know.
Okay.
What I want is clarity. Mm. What the public wants is clarity about this. And I'm quite sure that a lot of people in the DUP want public clarity about that as well. It could be very much the case that they've done everything right, and it would be good for them then to confirm that by everyone going, yep, that's fine. We can confirm that was legal donation. What has happened since the general election of 2017 is that the Conservative Party and the DUP are now in a loose confidence and supply arrangement, and there was a firm reassurance from both parties that there would be a sort of a state of Chinese walls between the Northern Ireland office and the rest of the British cabinet.
Mm.
And that all decision making that is within the realm of the Secretary of State would be entirely divorced from the day-to-day considerations of government.
Mm.
So that there would be no way in which it could be asserted that the DUP would be having any influence over the day-to-day management of this place, especially in this time of enduring crisis and suspension of government here that we've got since January. But on the 1st of July, the Secretary of State finally announced the conclusions of an ongoing and very narrow consultation with the political parties about the future of donations in Northern Ireland. And what he confirmed was that all donations given to political parties as of the 1st of July would, with the effect of a statutory instrument, they would now be public. So anybody giving donations to political parties of that size up to the 1st of July, they will be named. once he gets the statutory instrument. But he then said it wasn't fair to name anyone before the 30th of June because those people would have had an expectation to remain secret. I disagree. The messaging coming out of the Northern Ireland Act of 2014 was very much that there would have, like, anyone giving money from the 1st of January 2014 onwards could expect to be named eventually. And if you look at the law, the clauses about this, there would be nothing in there at all to imply enduring secrecy for the people giving money from the 1st of January 2014 onwards. So I disagree with his interpretation of the 2014 law.
Is there a legal challenge going on at the minute? Is there any sort of, like, at the moment, pushback on it?
At the moment, there is no visible action by the government at all on this. So the principle of what is going to happen has been confirmed, but the parliamentary mechanisms for enacting the Secretary of State's decisions have not started yet. So there's nothing to legally push back against if there would be any room for that.
Okay.
So
you'd think they were probably a little bit preoccupied at the moment.
I don't know. But there
or
will
just
be
ignoring the situation.
I think it is certain that there will be some parliamentary mechanisms triggered in the autumn.
Okay.
The question is going to be what those are and how they impact on the principle of transparency retrospectively. At the moment, there is a principle of retrospective transparency that would go back to 1st of January 2014. The question is, in the process of making transparent donations after the 1st of July 2017, what else might be put in there? The use of a statutory instrument at the Secretary of State's discretion wouldn't be able to involve any retrospective super secrecy or in reinforcing of secrecy.
Okay. Tell me this, actually. Yes. Would the Northern Ireland Assembly have the legislative ability to reveal those donors? Like, do they have those devolved powers or not? Because I'm aware that I think every party in the Assembly, apart from the DUP, are very openly keen to, you know, remove those barriers to transparency.
I'm going to get on to the other parties in a minute, because I do not want this to be simply bashing the DUP. The other three main parties really have a lot to answer for here. The power of the Assembly, were it to be restored to deal with this, would be complicated. The Electoral Commission on its governance is a reserved matter for Westminster. So there would need to be a requirement of political parties to register a separate set of donation registration in Northern Ireland, some new sort of repository for this information that the Northern Ireland Assembly would have control over.
Okay.
I don't know if they could retrospectively require parties to name all their donors all the way back, and how possible it would be to police that.
Mm.
I think that really the best way to get this information is to focus on Westminster and to focus on the Northern Ireland Office.
Okay.
And the Northern Ireland Secretary of State to deliver this retrospective transparency going back to 2014.
Do you think the fact that they're not, like, backdating it to 2014, do you think that was part of the confidence supply deal?
No. I honestly don't think that was discussed at all.
Okay.
I
What makes you say that? Just out of curiosity.
I cannot imagine anyone, if anyone was looking to do something so underhand and nefarious, I just can't. I mean, now that is just pure idle speculation.
Don't think they would be politically stupid enough to do.
I'm not going to use that language. I can't see any way in which those conversations, in the context of all the conversations that were going on, like I suppose what I'll say is I'm not going to speculate on that.
Okay.
But I'm not saying that in a kind of wink nod yes, that's what happened, way. No, I'm saying probably not.
Okay.
That's the best I can do for that one because I have no evidence. I'm just my best guess is probably not.
Just curious as to you know, where you stand on that.
I think that you got to bear in mind that the every sitting Conservative MP in the year 2000 voted against all the clauses in the Act that related to donor transparency. As a party, every MP, if you look back on the They Work For You, they all voted against it. So the question more is, how ideologically in agreement is the Conservative Party with the principle of donor transparency? Have they changed their opinion? Is that more what's influencing what the Secretary of State is doing here? I don't know. I'm just saying that one thing to consider is that the political party in charge of this at the moment did not support the principle of this in the year 2000 when they were voting on it.
Okay.
But again, that is idle speculation. The outcome is an injustice as far as I'm concerned. This is information that is important for every citizen of the UK to know.
Okay.
Do
you want to lay out why that's important? Like, so for example, say people are listening and being like, look, I don't understand why it's so crucial for us to know who's donated this money for the Brexit campaign. Like,
not just the Brexit campaign, the 2015 general election. You've got to think back to during the 2015 general election campaign, there was a lot of speculation about a hung parliament then. In fact, it was expected.
Mm.
And at that point, we were in a period where there was a principle of eventual transparency. So any money going to Northern Ireland parties at that time, that would be a period I would be very interested in seeing all the political parties in Northern Ireland who was giving them money at that point. Because money does flock to power, does flock to influence. So how...
Well, to an extent, like... Blair's Labour's didn't raise anywhere near the money, I don't think, that the Conservatives are raising now in terms of donation.
There would have been sizable donations, corporate donations, coming in during that time from certain sources.
Oh, no, I agree, but I feel like at the moment we have this position where... So I think it was the Conservatives got £10 million in the last election cycle, and Labour got £3 million, where... New Labour and the Conservatives would have been fighting over the corporate donors from the middle ground, where now it just seems like there's one very obvious place for a corporate institution to put their money, one party that you're going to back, maybe two if you were UKIP inclined, but realistically you're not going to be pumping your money into a party that's suggesting nationalisation and a slightly higher corporation tax.
But I suppose what I'm interested in is not the general ongoing problem of corporate money going into British politics, but the very specific problem of having a secret back door for influence.
Okay.
That you know, all those donations you're describing are going on in the light of day.
The light of day for who wants to see it.
Which is... Well, as good as it gets.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay. And you know, to an extent, I would say it is income. And the Fourth Estate do spend a lot of time checking that donor register. What the problem is that we've had some important elections, a European election, we've had a general election, and then an assembly election and another general election. And the most earth-shattering constitutional referendum of most people's lifetime, whether you know, and I mean that as in any outcome was going to be very, very sort of game changing. Leave or remain was going to be a game changing thing that was going to have repercussions. So during that whole time, there was a register of donors giving large amounts of money to Northern Ireland parties, and there were plenty of opportunities during all that time for money to find its way into political parties that were going to have influence.
Mm.
So it's not just about the referendum. I think the 2015 general election was very important. A lot of people were expecting a hung parliament, and that hung parliament would have led to situation we've now got, where a Northern Irish party, not just the DUP, but other Northern Irish parties, could have held the balance of power, could have been the kingmaker. So,
or queenmaker.
Or, like, I mean, kingmaker in the sense of the party itself, the political institution of power rather than the individual. The big problem is that we need to see that there was not some powerful lobby or interest group picking a political party in Northern Ireland and giving them a leg up. Mm. That money is important. Money during elections is important. And we want to know, that I think the people of the UK as a whole have a right to know, was there any powerful lobby or interest group during any of these election cycles or anything in between that seeking to influence or favour certain political parties with an existing ideology in Northern Ireland in the hope that they would have sway across the whole of the UK and further afield?
Mm.
You know, we put MEPs from here into Brussels, and Brussels has a lot of lawmaking power over the UK and across the whole of Europe, mm. and we're putting MEPs in there. We need to know. It is internationally important to know who has been funding political parties in Northern Ireland during important electoral cycles.
Mm.
The situation with the CRC and the referendum has just been the first time that we've really seen that our fears were well grounded, that influence from beyond Northern Ireland was seeking Northern Ireland as a secret backdoor to funnel influential amounts of money.
Mm.
And it's not just the DUP. The other three parties mm. have remained secretive about their big donations.
So could they just release their donations lists publicly if they fancied, if they like that?
There is no legal prevention. There's no legal block to them voluntarily naming all their donors way back to the year 2000, to the year 1960, now, if they want it.
So do you think it's just politically expedient for them to be basically DUP bashing?
I think it's complicated. And again, I'm not going to speculate too much into their motivations. They certainly, when you challenge some of the parties, they say, we're not going first. We're not going to put ourselves out there for criticism while they keep their secret. So mm. so there's a sort of a request that the state forces them all to be transparent, so that they're all transparent at once, so they all get the flak equally
okay.
for whatever embarrassments. I think embarrassments rather than actual scandals because are in there.
Do you think that the reveal of the donors to all of the parties, but sort of it's easier for us to, for me personally, just to discuss the implications of the DUP money with the Conservative confidence and supply deal, just because of the implications it has on, like, generally the governing of the country. Do you think that there's maybe a little reluctance to reveal who was bankrolling that donation, because it could in a way call into doubt the legitimacy of the Leave campaign and the Brexit and the referendum in general? Because there's obviously been a lot of money and influence peddled from shady sources in other elections, like Marine Le Pen was bankrolled very much by some Russian banks. Trump has a quite a few alleged ties to a lot of Russian money laundering and big banks. And while they're all kind of a bit in the dark at the minute, there's a lot of accusations of him having done business in the past, and obviously there's the Russia connection, and there was accusations that Russia were also trying to get involved in Holland in the elections there with Geert Wilders. Do you think that there's basically a fear that this could undermine the result of the referendum if the donor is found to be from somewhere outside the UK? Do you think that that could, basically, with all the pushback on Brexit at the minute, coming from Vince Cable, and whether, and like how legitimate you think that actually is debatable, but do you think there's a fear that that could further stoke that pushback, and that's part of why they're not keen to release it, or am I just connecting dots that aren't there?
I don't think that an electoral commission ruling on transgression of the law by one political party involved in the campaign would lead to a delegitimization of a referendum result.
I'm not suggesting that would be the sole factor. I'm suggesting that there's lots of little things that are stacking up against it that, like, that just started with the £350 million on the side of the bus, and, you know, the sort of disingenuousness of some Conservative politicians who were very pro-Remain and are now sort of very pro-Brexit, and it's, and now Vince Cable being like, you know, we need to have a think about this, the sort of poor economic growth that we've seen since the result. I see it more as like a stacking up of just reasons for people to go, ooh, is this still such a good idea? And that's not what the Conservatives or the DUP want. And to an extent, that just gives like a little bit more fuel on the fire.
I'm not going to speculate as to how much any of this would influence the overall Brexit campaign. I mean, you know, our only concern is that donor secrecy in Northern Ireland is toxic to public faith in and willingness to participate in the environmental democracy of Northern Ireland. That is participation in the planning system, faith in the environmental regulator to enforce environmental law, and faith in our legislative process to respond positively and responsibly to environmental problems like pollution, climate change, everything else. That's, you know, we believe fundamentally that public faith in these institutions leads to the right kind of participation, the right kind of assertion of the public will, in good faith, that when you do need to respond to environmental crises, which Northern Ireland is full of, that dark money is not working against you. Because a lack of faith in these institutions leads to people despairing rather than organising, rather than getting active. And it just means that our agenda cannot be pushed. The fact that the Brexit campaign and this particular issue with the Constitutional Research Council and the DUP has brought what we've been talking about for years into the public realm, I don't want to get too involved in that. I want to bring us back to the principle of transparency. Transparency is really good for democracy. It's really good for instilling faith and belief in getting involved in democratic institutions, in fighting to make institutions even more democratic. And democracy is good for the environment. Really engaged citizens talking in a deliberative and in an empowered way about environmental issues, I believe that you will get good outcomes for the environment when citizens feel empowered, especially when it comes to feeling empowered about decisions around the environment in a definable place that is local to them.
Okay. So would you be in favour of further devolution of powers towards like even more local institutions, councils, or like city councils, or just like boroughs?
In a regime of maximum transparency and very deliberative participative processes of decision making, then yes, I would believe in that. What has happened with the way in which planning powers have been devolved to councils is that you handed over those planning powers to councils, which are dominated by the same political parties that dominate Stormont. These are hierarchical, secretive parties with very little party democracy. Very controlled parties with very centralized decision-making powers. So how responsive those local elected representatives are to the concerns of the people, and how much the decision-making around planning being made by those councillors is responsive to public opinion rather than to party hierarchies that are secretly funded. That is what our concern is, and that's why we started this campaign. We started the Who Pulls the Strings campaign as a component part of a bigger campaign about finishing off the democratization of planning that is far from complete by the restoration of planning powers to local councils in 2015. There's much more work to do to make those really democratic planning powers. And we hadn't realized just how difficult it was going to be to get the principle of donor transparency in here. We really couldn't have and couldn't have predicted just how resistant four biggest parties here were going to be to transparency being brought in before planning powers were devolved.
Just to clarify, is that the DUP, the UUP, Sinn Féin and the SDLP?
All four of those parties.
Because arguably, you could say the Alliance are probably bigger than the UUP at this point.
Okay.
I just wanted to clarify which four you were talking about.
The historically four biggest parties here. Now, of the four of them, three in 2013 said, we don't want transparency yet, it's too dangerous. And that's the SDLP, UUP, and DUP. One, Sinn Féin said, oh yes, we want transparency, lots of transparency, much more transparency than we've got right now. Let's bring it down to £500. Like every donation over £500 has to be named. They have never, ever acted on or lived up to that principle. They have used very disingenuous language. Oh yes, we're very transparent. We always publish all our accounts. Now, accounts do not name donors. Sinn Féin does not name its big donors, but it implies strongly through its choice of language, whether they're deliberately or not, they imply very strongly that they are naming their donors. They don't. And then since 2017, the SDLP and UUP have also said, and the DUP have also said, yes, we all believe in transparency, we want transparency. None of those four parties is living up to that principle. None of them are voluntarily naming their donors now. And I have said on the record before, that is morally bankrupt. It is morally bankrupt to state a principle and not live up to it.
Couldn't agree more.
And that is the current state in which we find the four largest part or the historically four largest parties in Northern Ireland. They are stating position, they are not living up to that position, and they are now enjoying, whether they mean to or not, an undermining of a principle that was set up by Parliament in 2014, that eventually all donations given to Northern Ireland parties from the 1st of January 2014 of a size that is same as the rest of the UK, that those donations would be
seven and a half thousand
for a national party, 1,500 for a candidate or local party.
Okay,
that is the principle of the 2000 legislation across the UK. I personally want a lot more. I want donor transparency history going back to the year 2000. We're never ever going to get that.
No.
But what is deliverable right now is transparency from the 1st of January 2014. It is important for all the citizens of the UK and beyond that we get clarity as to what money was flowing into political parties here during that period. It was a critical period politically, internationally important. We have a right to know. Every citizen of the UK and anyone else who wants to find out has a right to know, and that right could be under threat.
Okay.
We don't know yet because we haven't seen what the Secretary of State is proposing.
Okay.
But there have been some worrying statements coming from the Northern Ireland office.
Yeah, I did not like the way it was announced in Parliament. It just seemed a bit sort of like they were trying to brush it under the carpet a little bit in terms of the announcement that the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland made when they first came out and said they weren't going to backdate it to 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So I just felt like perhaps that's just because no one really cares that much about Northern Ireland in Britain.
What he said was, and this is very telling about the whole problem of how this has been managed since James Brokenshire first announced he was looking into transparency. So he announced back in January 2017 that he was now looking into changing the regime. He then immediately consulted no one but the political parties. And that basically it was up to them and it was no one else's business. That was the message that was given out by choosing not to consult with civil society and the population as a whole. Simply the political parties themselves. What do you think about donors' transparency? And it is only their considerations that have, only their concerns and their beliefs that have been taken on as consideration by him in making his decision. Now, you've got to understand that under the 2014 legislation, that is his choice to make. And how much transparency he chooses to enact is his choice to make. What worries me is that what isn't his choice to make is a new retrospective permanent secrecy is not currently within his power, and it would require new primary legislation to do something like that. And this is what we're going to have to wait and see. Is that going to happen? But it is not something that's going to go away. And it is not just Friends of the Earth that has been talking about this. There are other institutions. Northern Ireland Open Government Network is interested in this. Open Democracy UK is interested in this. Journalism is now very interested in this. That this is not going to go away as an issue.
No, I can't see it going anywhere.
And it is important to broaden the conversation beyond the DUP, and it's important to broaden the conversation beyond Brexit. There are other bigger issues. Now, there are huge issues for Northern Ireland, just isolated as itself. As a polity, we have our big issues. But there are bigger...
I don't know who's funding the party, one of the parties who's stopping us putting a government together. You got a kind of question. Where that money's coming from and whether it's having an influence on their reluctance to put a government back together.
But also day-to-day administration and decisions around planning, decisions around governance, decisions around legislation about the environment, all of these things, we need clarity about how much money is influencing those, and we don't have it. That is important for us. What I'm saying to everyone beyond these shores, beyond this place called Northern Ireland, everyone else, is this does affect you too. Big things have happened in UK politics where Northern Ireland and Northern Irish parties could have been viewed as open to being influenced by big donations. We need to know. Especially the period from the 9th of June to the 30th of June 2017. That's an important window for funding for one party in particular, because it was in a position of power and influence at that time. That was a crucial window where it had a lot of power and influence. It would be good for them and for all of us to know that no big donations were coming their way in that critical period.
That's a very good point that I hadn't considered quite as specifically.
And I say this, clarity and transparency is good for everyone involved here. Because idle speculation and paranoia grows in secrecy.
Well, and look at Trump Russia. There's plenty of feasible explanations that would sort of half explain that, they weren't in complete treasonous collusion with the Russians, but because they won't reveal it, people's imagination runs wild.
And this is what we don't want. Because if we come back to the microcosm of the Northern Ireland planning system, whether or not there has ever been any corruption or influence sought through donations, I have no idea. What I do know is that when confusing or challenging or unpopular decisions are made around planning, the words brown envelope come up again and again and again, and it is toxic to the planning system as a whole, which should be based upon the principle of the right to participate, and the right to participate as an equal in that system. and to feel that the decision-making process was fair.
I couldn't agree more.
And that then builds up to, and this is, I suppose, where it is important what you were bringing up about further damage to the faith in the legitimacy of the outcome of the Brexit referendum. We need to know that all donations to all players on the Leave and Remain side were legitimate above board. We need to know this. We need to have faith in that outcome being a fair outcome and a fair fight.
Yeah, just to, because to like put it in, to play devil's advocate to my own point, like very realistically, the donation, the big donation that we've been talking about specifically, could have come from an entrepreneur or a corporation or a big firm within the UK who just don't want to admit publicly that they were in support of Brexit, maybe for reputations, maybe for why are they involved in politics. Like it could just be someone who just doesn't want their political opinion to be tarnishing their corporate world. Like, and obviously, again, that's speculation, but it could just be as idle as that.
And I would say they have no right to that secrecy if that is the consideration. The only reason there was ever donor secrecy here at all was a questionable assertion of security issues. The principle of freedom from embarrassment has never been won.
I'm not saying that that's a legitimate point.
But. Yeah. But I think it is important because during this ongoing discussion about is it safe to name the donors in Northern Ireland, there have been voices trying to undermine the general principle of donor transparency throughout the UK and the reassertion of a right to exercise this massive enhancement of your franchise, that spending all of your money on a political party's ability to win elections, which is what really a big donation is about. You know, even if you were seeking nothing in return, if you're one of the people who can afford this large amount of money and you choose to spend it on one political party's fortunes over another, you are augmenting your franchise. You have more influence than someone who just has a vote, because you are giving spending power, the ability to pay for advertising, the ability to pay for presence, the ability to pay clever people to manipulate your message, that you're saying, I like that party and I want them to have an advantage over other parties during this election cycle. And you should not expect to be able to do that in the shadows. It's not the same as the principle of the secret ballot.
Okay.
It is, because it is not a universally exercisable right to give that amount of money to a political party, because most people don't have that spare cash to give to a political party. You are an exceptional person in our society doing something exceptional, and you should expect to have to do that in the light of day. It is not the same as going into the ballot box and putting an X or a number on a piece of paper.
Or many numbers in
a piece. Yeah. This is an exercise of a privilege. A societal privilege most people don't have. Most people don't have £7,500 down the back of the sofa to give to the party of their choice.
No. So, unfortunately.
So whoever it was who gave £435,000, the person or persons or organisations who funneled that money through the Constitutional Research Council to funnel it through the DUP to bring it back into the English, Scottish, Welsh mainland to spend on that very, very large and very public campaign, they can't say it would be damaging to our reputation. They chose to give that money. There is no legal principle protecting them at all from eventually being named.
I know. Honestly, like when I'm making that point, I'm just trying to point out that it's not definitely some nefarious villain in a cave in Russia, like trying to manipulate the UK. Like I'm just sort of pointing out that there is the potential for it to be completely harmless in terms of like outside influence. Like it could just be some person, like I said, who wants to protect their reputation. Maybe they have a very pro-Remain millennial customer base that would, because boycotting is a reasonably big thing, maybe people would have something to say about, you know, their political opinions and that could affect their business. Maybe that's like why. So I just wanted to like make it clear that we're not just
speculating about, on the darkest of potential sources.
Yeah, exactly. And your point about the exceptionalism of having that amount of money to donate, do you think that there should be a cap on the maximum donation? Because, like, even, and now America's very different because they have their whole super PAC system where people can just funnel money in as much as they want. But they have, for like regular donations, they have a cap. I think it's $2,700. And again, that's still far more than any normal person has to spend on a political party. But do you feel that there should be a cap? Because obviously, like I was saying earlier about the Conservatives having more than three times the amount of funding that Labour did for the last election. Personally, I just feel like that's not a situation you want to be in. You don't want to have one particular party being bankrolled by any group, like whether it's Labour, and because the argument that gets made a lot more in the States than here, but is that the trade unions give a lot of money to the Democratic Party or to the Labour Party in the UK, and that they shouldn't have that same influence. And while people could argue that, you know, it's the people more than just a single corporation with a trade union, it's still like a singular group with influence, and people, including myself, would argue that there needs to be a very, very low cap on what people can donate, because unless everyone can afford to donate that much, then you're giving special power to people to pump money into like really like targeted social media advertising, or like weaponized like propaganda, fake news, if you're like talking about people like propagating like bots and like oracles that are going to, you know, back up people's own biases. Like there's a lot you can buy, like you said, with that money. And do you think essentially that we need to have a cap on donations?
I think we need to have an extensive society-wide conversation across the UK about the future funding of political parties. I think that what was enacted in the year 2000 for many people didn't go far enough. And it was contemplated that one option would have been the state funding of political parties based upon vote share. The number of votes you got would give you an amount of money.
Even then, I have problems with that because...
I'm just saying that I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with that. What I'm saying is that there were other things considered in the year 2000 that were not enacted, and the freedom to donate as much as you want was enshrined, basically, as long as you accepted transparency, was enshrined in the 2000 legislation. It's 18, 19 years later, you know, which is basically a generation. And I think that it's time to return to this conversation, certainly, and to do it in a really participative way, in a really deliberative way, to allow as much public input into that conversation as possible, as well as going back to some of the voices who were saying back then that some sort of public funding of political parties would be preferable, that getting the influence of the wealthiest in our society away from decision making, we should look at how achievable and desirable that is again. I think it's time to have that conversation again. It's time for a lot of conversations to be had again. And I would assert the general principle of participative and deliberative democracy in our society about all of these big problems, that we need a lot more democracy. Transparency is central to that democracy. Open data is essential to that democracy. Freedom of information is a poor cousin to a general principle of available and open data of all kinds. We need much more transparency.
Obviously, there are a lot of different issues you go into with transparency, but I had one last question for you. Was if someone is particularly shocked and horrified, if this is the first time they're hearing about this sort of secrecy in donations, or if it's something they've been concerned about for a while, like what would you recommend if someone wanted to get involved, if someone wanted to do something about it? Essentially, they're up in arms and scream, like waving their fist at their phone as they listen.
Yeah. Okay. First thing is, if you're on Facebook, to look up the Who Pulls the Strings group that we run.
We'll put all these in the description.
Great. So ask to join that group and you'll be given information about future campaigns. Follow or like the Friends of the Earth Northern Ireland homepage or page on Facebook. And also email niall.bakewell@foe.co.uk, specifically asking to be put on a mailing list about all future activism. We are waiting for confirmation of what will be coming next from the Northern Ireland office about this before we would take any further action. Okay. But there will be more activism arising out of this.
Okay.
Unless there is a change of heart and we are told that we are going to eventually get that retrospective transparency. But I would also urge people to, wherever they are in the UK, sign up to the Open Government Network in their area, because that's an excellent group that is doing great work, not just in this one field, but in transparency and open government in general, especially open data. So I would say definitely, I mean, here you have the Northern Ireland Open Government Network, but you've got one in England, Scotland and Wales. Mm. So sign up for that. And that's the best you can do for now. But there will be much more campaigning about this coming up in the future.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
No worries. Thanks, Josh. That was great.
Thanks so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode of The Chatter, we have many more fantastic interviews lined up for you over the next few weeks, including Boyd Slater of Humanism Northern Ireland and Stephanie Farnsworth of Stand Up Magazine. If you enjoy the show, you can share us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and even tell your friends about the show.